Now to Iceland, which could unfreeze the process of joining the European Union if a referendum passes on the 29th of August. The poll could have implications for EU enlargement more broadly. But Iceland would have to vote yes in a second referendum to actually join the EU. And even with a yes vote this month, there's no guarantee that the second vote would even happen. So how does all this work? Let's ask Darren Adam from RÚV English, the Icelandic National Broadcasting Service. Darren, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you very much.
So, Darren, what is Iceland's relationship with the EU as it currently stands?
Since the middle of the 1990s, Iceland has been part of the European Economic Area, the EEA, which is, it's a bit like the EU in some ways, but it's not. It's the single market. If you remember the Brexit conversation in the UK, perhaps, there's a lot of talk about the UK leaving the single market, which it ultimately did. The EEA is that bit, if you like, and all the EU members are also members of the EEA. Iceland and Liechtenstein and Norway are only members of the EEA. Now, what that means in reality is that we're about 70% aligned maybe with the European Union and its legislation. We enjoy, for example, the four freedoms, including freedom of movement. So if you have an Icelandic passport, as I do, you basically have a passport that lets you live and work anywhere in the European Union, and of course the other two EEA countries as well. So in that sense, there's a lot of integration already. What Iceland isn't, however, is a member of the customs union. So if you order something from Amazon, say, it's possible, but you've got to pay the import duties as if you were a third country, which you are. There's another way, however, in which Iceland is sort of associated with the European Union, and that is that we're part of the Schengen passport-free zone. Now, that's not an EU thing, but it does sort of line up quite nicely with a lot of EU countries. So we're kind of half in and half out at the moment, which is why, as we'll get into, if Iceland didn't join, it wouldn't be disastrous for Europhiles in the same way that Britain leaving the European Union completely was.
So it's a half-in arrangement currently, but this is not even a vote to go the other half in. So what were the negotiations that began back in, I think it was 2009, and why were they frozen in 2013?
Well, the government that came to power in 2009 said, we want to join the European Union. We're going to begin accession talks with the EU. And then another general election happened in 2013. It was won by two right-wing parties who, despite the fact that they'd promised to have a referendum if they won on whether or not these accession talks should continue, unilaterally decided that they wouldn't. So they sent a letter to Europe basically saying, that's it, we're out, we're not interested anymore. This was a surprise to the EU. Since then, there has even been a debate in Iceland as to whether these talks are still live. The consensus seems to be that they are, which is why we're talking in this referendum about resuming accession talks, not beginning accession talks. However, you will find people who don't want to join the EU, for example, who will very much say, there are no talks. This is about starting them, not restarting them. How could it be anything other? But as I say, the consensus is that this is a vote on resuming, restarting those accession talks, and as much as is possible, picking up from where they were left off in the mid-teens.
And that vote will happen in a couple of weeks' time. So this far out, Darren, what does the polling look like in terms of whether Iceland is likely to vote to resume the accession talks?
Well, there have been polls on this issue, but inevitably, because there's been overspill, I mean, even in this conversation, which is absolutely fine, you know, people think we're talking about the accession talks, and that's true, but then they also think, well, what happens if people do or don't want to join the EU further down the line? So there has been kind of twin-track polling, and the polling has suggested that for this referendum, it is leaning towards yes. So a narrow yes vote for picking up those accession talks. However, the polling that's been done at the same time, because it inevitably would be, tends to show the opposite for those who don't want to join the European Union. So you might get a yes vote in this referendum followed by a no vote to actually joining. And that's what the polling is currently saying. That said, the most recent poll, just on the question of picking up the accession talks, was 46% yes, 46% no, and 8% Don't know. That's the most recent polling just on this question.
Well, I think we can confidently say that anything could happen then.
Yes.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Darren Adam from RÚV English, the Icelandic National Broadcasting Service, about this upcoming referendum on whether to resume talks about Iceland potentially joining the European Union. So, Darren, in terms of the points for and against and the issues that people are debating in Iceland at the moment, could you talk us through what they are and how much they involve fish?
Well, let's stick firstly to the issues around this question of whether we should pick up the talks or not. Because if you don't want to join the EU for whatever reason, then you're already locked in because the process kind of ends here if it's a no vote. So you can basically already say no to the EU by saying no to the talks. The argument that's being made in favor of a yes vote here is that we just don't know what kind of deal we're going to get until we have the talks. We don't know what's in the box. So let's at least open the box and see what the contents are before we condemn it or otherwise. So that's the argument as far as this stage is concerned. You're right, though, further down the line, fishing is the main issue because Iceland has control of its fisheries at the moment, even though it's in the EEA, it has full control of its fisheries, a very important resource in just about every town in Iceland. And the question is now, can the European Union promise essentially a carve-out from their rules regarding fishing? Now, the noises that have been coming from Brussels are very encouraging for those who want to hear those noises coming from Brussels. Marta Kos, who is the enlargement commissioner, has said, in terms, I'm sure something can be done. Obviously, there's a great deal of skepticism around that, but we come back to this question of not knowing what the exemptions might be until we say, can we find out what the exemptions are? You know, that leaks into this vote even as well, even though it's strictly about whether or not the talks should continue. People already want to know, yes, but what will the talks be about if we say yes? And what will they say if we say yes? We just don't know at this stage. Fishing would be further down the line a huge issue. Something that is less critical is love for the Icelandic currency, because a lot of people who generally don't want to, historically have not wanted to be part of the European Union, have said, but we like our franc, we like our Deutschmark or whatever, we don't want to lose that national currency. Here in Iceland, you hear that a lot less, because the krona, although the banknotes look very nice, none of us use them, it's an entirely cashless society just about. You know, there's not a lot of love for the currency. And because it's a small currency, it gets tossed around on the high seas and really doesn't do very well. And so there's a big case to be made for joining a bigger currency, whether that is the euro or a different currency, of course, remains to be seen. But that's the one that's kind of in front of us at the moment. You would find people who don't want to join the EU who would want to be part of the euro, which is a very different dynamic to what you might hear in some bigger countries with a more lovable currency. So I think that's an interesting conversation, that's point that's working in the way that you might not imagine. Fishing is, of course, very important. And I guess as well, Iceland is famously a very independent country. Its most famous novel, you could say, is Halldór Laxness' Independent People, which is the story of modern Iceland, having won its independence from Denmark in the 1940s in a referendum with something like 99% of the vote in favor of leaving the Danish kingdom and the Danish crown. So that feeds into the argument as well, that kind of on principle, there are some people who just don't want to surrender any sovereignty, even though a huge chunk of it already resides, as we've said, in Brussels because of the EEA agreement.
Yes, one thing that's definitely changed since these negotiations, or the possibility of negotiations, was happening, is the broader state of the world. And obviously there's been a lot of talk about Greenland and President Trump's occasional recurring desire to have it. How has the changed geopolitics that we are dealing with at the moment fed into the domestic debate about this referendum, Darren?
I think it has reinforced the existing lines, because those who favor European Union membership can obviously point to what Trump has said about Greenland, just across the water from us, and indeed on two occasions about Iceland when he apparently misspoke. He wants to have Iceland. He said that twice in public in front of microphones and cameras, and then it was discovered that he'd misspoken. He knew. So those who favor EU membership are obviously pointing to that and saying, well, this is exactly why we should be aligning ourselves with the European Union. But actually, Those who don't want to join are saying that Trump would defend Greenland against China and by extension would defend Iceland against China as well. That's the argument you hear on the other side. And I've got to say that the first argument is probably more persuasive to more people than the second, but you do hear the second argument being made by a much smaller cohort of people. But you're absolutely right. This question of international security and geopolitics in a worldwide sense matters much more now than the conversation ever did back in 2013, when it was frankly inconceivable that America would behave in the way that America is currently behaving and that its leader would behave in the way that its leader is currently behaving as regards Greenland and, who knows, possibly Iceland as well.
A big factor of previous national EU votes, the Brexit vote, but pretty well any national election these days, is concerns about foreign interference. Has that been the case in the lead up to the Iceland referendum? And if so, who's worrying about whose interference?
There was concern that some right-wing forces had made their way to Iceland, I think from the UK. Certainly one newspaper reported this. I don't have all of the detail, but it was reported with some credibility that there was some interest, at least from outside agencies, or I should say outside actors, perhaps not agencies, in what is about to happen in Iceland. And indeed, our foreign minister has said that she is concerned about a Brexit rerun in the sense, not of the result, but in terms of the interference that absolutely infected the UK when it went through the Brexit process and the Brexit vote. So there is concern. As for specific evidence of interference, I think that is harder to find. I suspect you might find it closer to any second referendum, because that's when this gets real, doesn't it, as far as Iceland joining or not joining is concerned. Maybe, and this is just me speculating, if there is outside interference to be had, perhaps those who would seek to exercise it are merely keeping their powder dry until a second vote. That's just one possible theory, shall we say.
And finally, Darren, if there is a yes vote on the 29th of August, is there then a timetable for another vote or negotiations or anything? What is the process in the event of a yes vote?
Well, here's where it gets even more complicated, because let's assume there is a yes vote in a couple of weeks. And let's assume that negotiations with the European Union pick up pretty quickly. And let's assume that a deal is on the table for the Icelandic people to vote on within, let's say, 18 months of that. Now, that gets us pretty close to the next parliamentary election in Iceland. So let's assume that there's a second referendum. And let's assume that the people say yes in that referendum as well. And let's also assume that the parliament, which it would because of its current composition, also says yes to the deal. There then has to be another separate parliament that approves what has happened. Why is that? Because the ceding of this further sovereignty will require a change to the Icelandic constitution. That has to be approved by the Icelandic parliament, but approved by two parliaments. So you'd have the people voting, you'd have the parliament voting on the deal, you'd then have parliament voting to change the constitution because it's the same parliament. You'd then have the general election, because the timing is pretty much around then anyway. Even if it's not, you'd have to have one, because a second parliament has to approve the changing of the constitution. Now, if we got to that second parliament and that second vote in parliament, would newly elected MPs go against the, and here's the phrase I never wanted to say again in my life, the will of the people, as expressed in that previous second referendum? That's the big question. You might have parliamentarians right now who are very opposed to the European Union deciding to abstain because they don't want to be seen to be going against what people have just said. So there's a lot of hurdles here for Iceland to actually join. And the hurdles are not really on the EU side. They're all on the Icelandic side. Two referendums and two parliaments, one of which needs to approve the change of the constitution, which most legal scholars think is necessary, although there is some doubt about that as well. But let's assume it is necessary at this stage. Otherwise, we'll be here forever. So as you can see, there's a long way to go. And when you say, what's the timetable? The answer is it depends on that flowchart and all of those things happening in a particular way. But let's assume that everything goes the way that those who want to join the EU want it sponsored to go. I think that Iceland could probably join the European Union within maybe 5 years, because Montenegro is another candidate country, although it's a very different country to Iceland. The suspicion is that the EU might want to just do the accession for both these countries at the same time, Iceland and Montenegro, actually just about as far apart as you can get geographically within what would be the EU. But there would be a nice sort of geographical symmetry to that, I suppose, if the two countries joined at the same time. So I would think that if everything goes, you know, quote unquote, the right way, then potentially within 4 or 5 years, Iceland could be an EU member.
Well, it will be fascinating to see if Iceland does vote yes on the 29th of August. But I also think that we have reached our statutory limit of ifs, so we'll probably have to leave it there, Darren. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra today.
You're very welcome.
That's Darren Adam from RÚV English, the Icelandic national broadcaster, and the first of what could be many steps in the tiptoeing process to EU accession takes place on the 29th of August.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.